I'm Scott Paul, and this is the Manufacturing Report.
If it wasn't for the steel industry in Northwest Indiana, Northwest Indiana wouldn't exist.
We actually hired 24 additional people 2 weeks ago on Monday. It's a win-win for Cleveland.
Right now, we're in an actual layoff. My mill has been damaged.
This past March, U.S. Steel Corporation announced that it would restart one of its blast furnaces at its Granite City, Illinois plant, which had previously been idled. Now, with this restart, 500 workers have returned to their jobs at the mill. But even more good news has emerged recently as U.S. Steel announced that it will restart a second blast furnace in Granite City in October of this year, hiring back an additional 300 workers on top of the 500 workers who have already been hired or returned to their jobs. Around the country, a surprising number of steel mills are reopening, and communities are benefiting from the resurgence of American manufacturing, although some steel mills are still suffering the consequences of long-standing trade imbalances. Today, we're going to check in on three different steel communities in the United States to see how the trade actions are impacting their towns. That's coming up next on the Manufacturing Report. Let's get started. Dan Boone is a longtime steelworker in Cleveland, Ohio. He's currently the president of United Steelworkers Local 979, and together with his coworkers, he's seen his community through both good times and bad. Thankfully, Dan's mill is booming right now, and Cleveland is reaping the rewards. Let's hear more from Dan.
The communities that surround our mill right now are doing rather well because in particular, our plant is doing well. And unfortunately, other plants aren't, but because of some of the things that we make makes us valuable to the auto industry as well as to the company. We work for ArcelorMittal Steel. And one of the things that we do that makes us valuable is we make the advanced high-strength steel. So that's the lighter than traditional steel, but also much stronger than aluminum. And because it's doing well, and we say that there's anywhere from 5 to 7 peripheral jobs that are connected to each steelworker job. So that could be anywhere from in the community restaurants, any local businesses, suppliers, surrounded by, small towns, and, so they get tax money as well. In 2015, hot band steel was $375 a ton, and now it's, over the last 3 years, it's continued to climb till now it is hovering around $850 a ton. And the tariffs are definitely a part of that. And that even the threat of, the tariffs coming actually had what we believe is a positive impact. We actually hired 24 additional people 2 weeks ago on Monday. And our current membership in our main local now is approximately 1,660 members. So. And then we have 4 amalgamates, associated locals with us. So our membership's about 2,000 people now. So that's definitely good. But all of that does go back into the communities. They all have money to spend, and in this case, it is trickle down. So it's good for the community. All our suppliers, we have contractors come into the plant to do jobs that we don't do, specialty things. So it's a win-win for Cleveland. Unfortunately for other plants, as I've said, not so good. In our neighborhoods around our communities, they understand. Because in 2001, LTV Steel went away, 83,000 retirees lost their health care. Businesses filed for bankruptcy, closed, went out of business, and that was just from the input of money from people that worked at the mill. The little restaurants closed, and local establishments on the corner closed, and just the trickle down. Only it wasn't money that trickled down; it was the after effects.
Dan has witnessed firsthand how a mill closure can dramatically change the lives of workers and alter the fates of entire families and communities. And unfortunately, Conshohocken, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia, is in the midst of such a struggle. Here's Kameen Thompson. He's the president of the United Steelworkers Local Union at ArcelorMittal's Conshohocken Mill.
Right now, we're in an actual layoff. We laid off about 17 workers in April. We have another mass layoff that's coming in August of 31st of this year of 125 workers. We went from 400 workers in 2005 down to 275 and 15, 216, and now we should be down to 71 workers in August of this year. My mill has been damaged. It's been too long. It was too late at the time. Company made a decision financially to make a reduction in workforce because we do make military high-strength alloy steel. That market is not a big market, so to speak. We make a lot of our steel for the DOD, Department of Defense. Right now, that has not been the case for them to order right now, so the profit for the company is not there at this time, so they chose to reduce the manpower in our plant. If the steel is not made primarily at my plant, there's not a lot of plants that actually make and do what we can do. Mm-hmm. We have a unique mill, which has a Steckel mill. I'm not going to get into sort of the technicalities of it, but it's a unique mill. A lot of the mills in the U.S. doesn't have a Steckel mill, doesn't have what we call a reversing mill that can get the steel down to a lighter gauge. You have to remember that we make a lot of the steel for tanks and Humvees. These Humvees has to be flown onto a plane over to Iraq and Afghanistan or anywhere that we have a war overseas. The steel has to be a light gauge and it has to be high strength. So a lot of plants cannot make this type of steel. So if we have to depend on another country, which so to speak is China, then we're going to be in trouble if we got to wait for the steel to come over on a boat and we got to wait for it to be made, and it's going to be a nightmare. And we shouldn't be even Russian steel, we should not be having our U.S. military having foreign steel in our vehicles. I think the government right now, what they're doing with the exemptions is not helping as much, because even though China was doing the major of bringing the steel over, they still at some point was taking the steel and bringing it through other countries. So even having the exemptions is not great. Members are losing their jobs based on not having tariffs in place for about 3 years. National security will be affected. My plant in 2002, 2003 were the main producers of the Afghanistan war for the Humvees. We did basically turned on a dime to help the troops and the vehicles be more high strength and steel. So we basically produce, I would say, somewhere around 75% to 80% of the Afghan war steel for the Humvee. So that will be affected. I mean, that's a lot of steel. I mean, we were doing 10,000 tons a week. I'm shipping it over to Afghanistan. So all this has to be thought about. All this will be affected. And the thing about it is that the members that are being low, losing their job, are skilled. You know, no one can just be hired off the street to roll steel, to cut steel. I mean, these are jobs that has been affected for over 20 years. So to say, okay, we'll just hire someone else, that's not always easy. Over time, yes, you know, they'll be able to get it. But if you need the steel now, if there's something that happens in another country or there's a war here on our own soil or somewhere else where we have to help and we have to depend on new employees or new members to roll steel, may not be able to happen overnight. So I think all this needs to be looked at and also, you know, reviewed, but hopefully, and you know, everything will work out.
Yeah.
Some workers and their families are struggling in Conshohocken right now, but if America strengthens its commitment to defending its workers and holds firm on steel and aluminum tariffs, there's hope yet. In Northwest Indiana, the largest steelmaking region in America, steel and aluminum tariffs have already helped workers return to their jobs. Here's Mike Wheeler. He works in the transportation department at Chrome Deposit Corporation in Portage, Indiana. And Mike's going to share how tariffs have helped his community.
Our region relies on the steel industry. If it wasn't for the steel industry in Northwest Indiana, Northwest Indiana wouldn't exist. And with the tariffs coming back in, they are being implemented, they will increase the production in our area to the point where we will probably be able to hire more people, get people back to work in the area. In our industry, it's been very positive. When you go to the mills and talk to the other union workers, they're very excited about it. They want to get it back to where they're working 18, 20 turns instead of working 5 to 6 turns. Because that's how bad it's gotten in the area. We make the best products there is in the world here, right here in the United States. You know, and we've got to enforce that back into the people that we are the best in producing this stuff. It's not going to be, you're not going to convince everyone overnight. It's something we have to continuously remind them that it's a good product, it's made here in the United States, and it's just going to be better for everyone's generations coming and past, you know. I don't know, the old saying, my grandfather, I remember telling me, you know, we're trying to leave the country in a better shape than what we got it. I'm a little concerned, you know, because of I have young, you know, 21-year-old kids, and I'm thinking, are we going to leave it better? Are we putting them in a good spot? We have to do a lot of work to get the standards back to where they should be. And by putting these tariffs in, it's going to do that. It's going to show that we make a very quality, good product here in the United States. I'm excited. I really am excited about these tariffs. I just hope, because we've tried tariffs before, I just hope that they stick to their guns and don't make side deals with these foreign countries and put us right back in the shape we were at when the Bush administration did it, and the next thing you know, our tariffs were gone, and we were back in almost a recession again, and it caused a lot of issues in the steel industry. Mm-hmm. So we got to stick to our guns on this one. We can't, you know, a lot of people are going to push for this to be taken away because I come out of the farming industry. I grew up in the farming industry, and the farming industry is scared to death right now about these tariffs because they think that they're going to reverse it on them on their exports of their soybeans and everything else. And it's not going to. They're still going to buy their soybeans. They're still going to buy their stuff to feed their people. Just trust. We got to trust in the government that they're doing the right thing. And I do believe they're doing the right thing with these tariffs.
And there you have it. Compelling stories straight from workers in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Indiana about what trade actions have meant to these steel communities. In just a few weeks, I'll be heading to Indianapolis, the renowned manufacturing center and flourishing tech hub, for the Mensa Foundation's annual colloquium. It's a one-day educational symposium that gathers Mensans and the general public for a deep dive about an important topic that affects our culture and society. And it just so happens that this year the topic is the evolution and revolution of manufacturing. And so if you're in the Indianapolis area on July 3rd, I invite you to join me and the Mensa Foundation to discuss the state of American manufacturing with me and a series of experts and influencers in the industry. For tickets and more information, you can visit Mensa at ag.us.mensa.org/#colloquium. And as always, I want to thank E18 and AAM for their work to make this episode possible, and for you, the listeners, for engaging and giving us fantastic episode ideas. You can find us online at AmericanManufacturing.org, on Facebook, or you can connect with us on Twitter at KeepItMadeInUSA. I'm Scott Paul, and until next time, together, we can keep it made in America.